You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, are you a business owner, entrepreneur, or professional? If so, we want you to apply to be a featured guest on our show. My name is Adam Torres, and I host the Mission Matters series of podcasts. I've recorded over 3,000 episodes, and we are just getting started. How do you know if you'd be a good guest to be on the show? Well, only one way to find out, and that's to apply, but I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We want guests that have a story to tell, guests with a brand, a product, or a service that can benefit my audience of listeners. If this sounds like you, go to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. I'd love to talk to you and get to know more about your story. Again, head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, now let's get into the show. Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so I have Aaron Christopher Evans, also known as AC, on the show, and he's the co-founder and CEO of Drips. AC, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
All right, AC, so big topic we have today. A lot of business owners, entrepreneurs, executives watch this show, and they're looking for tips, they're looking for insight, and you have that today, specifically in engagement and engaging your audience and your target audience. So I'm excited to get into that and how Drips has evolved and how you're helping clients do that. But just to get us kicked off, we'll start with our Mission Matters Minute. So AC, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. So that's our mission here. AC, what mission matters to you?
It's a big question. I'll answer it two ways. What I'd say matters to me, and then what matters to Drips. What matters to me as an entrepreneur is scaling the unscalable. And what I mean by that is solving really difficult problems. How that translates to Drips is we have built technology, a world-class, best-in-class technology that allows the biggest enterprises in the world, the biggest insurance companies, banks, healthcare companies, to hold one-to-one humanized conversations at scale in a way that wasn't possible before.
Man, that's exciting. And I'm excited to get more into how you're helping enterprises do this, because it's a game changer. It really is. And that idea of that one-to-one feel and communication at scale has been such a difficult thing to accomplish in the past. But what you're doing with Drips is it's really a game changer. So let's just to get us a little bit further in the conversation. I mean, and we're going to do a deep dive into Drips, but like, tell me a little bit more about your background. Like, how'd you get started as an entrepreneur and on this journey?
I got started as an entrepreneur by getting fired by a lot of jobs as a young professional, I would say. No, I honestly though, I've always been into, creating things, innovating things. I found a passion for it very early. I wasn't a great student. I was like a D-minus student. I was always drawing or doodling or playing with things. And I actually went into a vocational school, which is a hands-on, the course I was in was digital design, which was a lot of programming and graphic design, which I loved. And I went from being probably arguably one of the worst students in the school to one of the best students at that school. I've won, many awards, had different scholarships, go to different art schools. I ended up taking and going into college at Akron U, but dropped out my first semester because I was, as a young, 18-year-old, 19-year-old that didn't love school, I was already doing my own thing, making six figures a year, building my own businesses online. And, so my journey as an entrepreneur started pretty early, right around 18.
Man, that's an amazing story. And I feel like some people just have that, that entrepreneurial bug or that urge, and they just have to do it. And I know there's some people out there right now that are listening that are maybe they're not, quite as far along as you on their journey. And maybe they're still thinking about getting their first, business up and going. And like, what kind of things would you tell them as they kind of embark on that journey?
There's no better time than now. I'll tell you that much. Back in, you know, 99, 2000, we weren't called entrepreneurs. We were called losers, right? Like people that, you know, didn't have or couldn't hold a job. There has never been a better time to be an entrepreneur. I mean, especially you think of like what COVID's done as far as like people able to spin up their own businesses, you know, from their houses, literally. I think, you know, one of the things I would suggest to people is to do it as early as you can, right? Like a lot of people, I'm 39, I'll be 40 in a couple months. And I feel so young. I feel like I have so much work left to do. I feel so energized. And if you had asked me how it would have felt at 40 when I was, you know, 20, I would have thought, you know, I would have been like an old man by then. And so anyway, the point being, I was able to do a lot, try a lot, travel a lot in my 20s and my 30s because of my entrepreneurialism. You know, I was able to like just try so much. And the second piece of advice, other than just starting, would be it doesn't have to be, you don't have to jump all over. You don't have to quit your day job, right? Like that's a big misconception, I think, that a lot of people have. There's a lot of hours in the day, right? There's 18, you know, if you work it hard, there's 18 waking hours in any given day. And you can work a real job, hold down a salary, pay your bills, pay your rent. And then you can do, you know, your entrepreneurial thing, your startup thing at night until, you know, the tides start to shift. And then eventually, you know, maybe you quit your day job. But that's something else I always tell people is it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You can truly do both for some amount of time.
That's great advice. And I tell people that all the time. And that's how this whole company started. So I said, I was a financial advisor. Sure, I was a business owner, meaning I own that practice and I own that. But, you know, there was a tipping point to where I had to decide, like, am I going to go full time in media or am I going to stay on this? Because the media side's taking a lot more of my time now. And am I going to make that leap or not? So I love that you make that point. And I always bring that up. I'm like, you don't have to, especially now with the gig economy and being able to freelance and do other things. You don't even have to have the normal 9 to 5 if you want. You might be working on your entrepreneurial venture during normal business hours, and you might be hustling at night doing Uber or who knows, or delivering something or doing something to make sure the bills are paid. But you just have so many different options now compared to once upon a time. So Matt, I love your insight on this, I'll say.
Yeah. One last thing I'll add is whatever it is that you decide to start investing that time in as you're building, you know, some new venture, doing some new startup, solving some new problem, you have to make sure that it's something that you're passionate about, right? Some mission that matters to you, you know, no pun intended, right? But that passion will be the thing that will allow you to wake up at 5 a.m., that will allow you to work until 11 or 12, that'll keep you obsessed over something over the weekend while you're still thinking about whatever the problem is. The number one killer I've seen of startups and founders is they weren't passionate about what they did. It was just a thing that they did to try to make money. And it's not to say you can't make a lifestyle business that way. I did that for years. But you will never build a real big business and you won't solve large problems.
Awesome. Great insight there. So I want to switch it up a bit. So let's go further into today's topic. So brand engagement with audiences. I mean, you're doing this at scale. You're doing this for large companies, as you mentioned, like, you know, finance companies, insurance, like big companies. So like, maybe just start off with telling us a little bit more about the problem, what people are looking to accomplish. I mean, let's start there.
I think the problem is big companies can't get a hold of their consumers anymore. And I'll go even a layer deeper as to why, right? Back, you know, you look like you're around my age, like back in the day, if the phone rang in our household, it was like an exciting time, right? Like me and my sister would trip over each other to get to the kitchen to answer the phone to see who it was, you know, back in the 80s and 90s. That's changed. And the reason it's changed is back then, my sister and I were bored to death. Right. We had 12 channels on the TV. There was no video games. There were no iPhones. There was no internet. So there was nothing better to do. Fast forward to today. Mm-hmm. Consumers have everything at their fingertips. They have everything on demand. My sister and I and my family, you know, you could get what was it? Little Caesars or Domino's pizza on demand. Yep. And that was it. That was it. Yep. That was the only thing, you know, there was no Amazon, you know, there was no Candy Crush or Netflix with endless content. Right. So how do you cut through that noise when every consumer has something that they'd rather be doing, mm-hmm. right? And that's the problem with enterprises trying to connect with their consumers is what are they using? They're using email. We're inundated with email. Mm-hmm. They're using direct mail. Do you carefully comb through your direct mail anymore? No. You know, if it's not a package from Amazon, it's getting thrown away at my house. They're using radio, commercials. People don't even see, who sees commercials anymore? People can pause live TV. You can fast forward through commercials, right? They're using push messaging in call centers. And I don't know about you, but if I don't have you in my contacts, I'm just not answering the phone, right? So what's the common denominator across all these things? It's push messaging, right? Yep. It's one way. And it's attempting to steal the time of the consumer, mm-hmm. right? I'm calling you saying, you know what, Adam, now's the time to talk, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to put a commercial in front of you and your TV show. Yep. And that just doesn't work in an on-demand society. And that's where we've been for some years. And that's why year over year, people see open rates declining, direct mail ROI declining, call pickups declining. Mm-hmm. So how does a company cut through that noise? And that's the question that Drips answers.
Oh, I love it. And it does make sense. And you actually just took me to my childhood now. We are the same age. And I'm sitting here thinking, wow, you're right. Like I'm thinking, thank you, Mike Ilitch, you know, rest in peace for creating that Little Caesars pizza and all those things. Cause if we didn't have that, man, you're right. It was an event. The phone rang and it's like, oh, I wonder who it is. Like what's going on here? Like,
how about when somebody came to your house, right? That was an exciting moment. It's my knocking on the door. Now somebody hits your doorbell and like, you're like hitting the lights. You're like, who is at my house? It's just a different, it's an on-demand society, mm-hmm. right? Like if mm-hmm. I didn't schedule time with you to come to my house, you better not show up. Right. Yeah. And that's what we're doing for these big enterprises is helping consumers hold long tail conversations with them asynchronously mm-hmm. to figure out when it's a good time for the consumer. Cause guarantee you right now is not a good time.
Yeah. Let's break down like maybe some of those different types of messaging or things like that. I don't want to assume the audience understands, like even let's just throw this out there, what a push message is, right? Like all of these things. Cause I think, and for myself, now I know a little bit more about these as time goes on, but I'll just say that like, usually I'm finding out about a new technology cause they hit me with it. And I'm like, oh, now I have this new alert or this new thing that's happening to me that somebody did along the way. So maybe just give us an idea of just the landscape and what you're seeing. Just the general ones.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought this up because I hate when people call us an SMS company, right? Yeah. There's 1,000 SMS companies out there, maybe tens of thousands, who knows. Mm-hmm. The different categories are push, right? So think of Chipotle, right? They send out coupon codes, you know, hey, come in and get your free guac for, you know, Halloween or whatever. That is a traditional drip campaign, right? Mm-hmm. When we named Drips, it was actually a little more tongue in cheek because what we do is actually the antithesis of a drip campaign. A drip campaign, a push messaging campaign goes out in perpetuity, right? It's one way in nature and it goes on forever. It's meant for branding exercises to stay in front of somebody, just like a commercial would, right? What Drips does is we hold a conversation that lasts a few days mm-hmm. To drive somebody to an outcome. So there's push, which is just one way. And it keeps going out and think of that drip campaign type thing, right? It most commonly was on email, but now a lot of companies are doing it with SMS, specifically mm-hmm. retail companies. Then you have what I would call blast messaging, which is similar, but this is when the marketing department at an enterprise kind of loads up a list of people, sends them a big thing like, hey, special on, you know, whatever it may be, whatever offer they have, right? Call us back at this number to try to, you know, get your, you know, buy one, get one, et cetera. Yep. Then you have chatbot, right? So you probably actually dealt with this. This is, you know, a dentist, right? Respond C to confirm, R to reschedule. It's mechanical in nature. Yep. Nobody likes it, but it serves a purpose for where it is. That's a good thing to have for a dentist.
A dentist, it works great. I love it for a dentist. I'm like, oh, I don't have to pick up the phone or talk to anybody. Why? Yes, I'll be there. Okay, go ahead. I had to throw that in there for our dentists out there. Keep doing it.
That's right. You guys already got the solve. Good job. Then you have what I would call alerts. So these are conditional things, right? That are coming in at the right time and letting you know. So think, my favorite example is United Airlines, right? Mm. Where your gate change, you get a text message, yeah. your butt moves, right? You move to the next gate. You don't need to like, you know, have a conversational, you know, texting, you know, engagement yeah. with United to move to gate B47. Last, before I get to what we do, is you have human two-way channel. So what I mean by this is, say a bank or a loan, mortgage company, they open up texting as a channel, right? So now their call center agents, their nurses, their loan officers, whatever it may be, have the ability to text back and forth. Mm-hmm. You can imagine how expensive that is.
Oh yeah.
Quality control around that, regulatory concerns, right? What if the person exposes somebody's PHI or says something they're not supposed to when they're not supposed to? These people have to sleep, right? So not a bad place to start. And if you have a small small company or small audience, you said you're a financial advisor firm, like that's actually a great place to start for somebody that is that has that small you know, agency that needs to hold dozens of conversations, maybe hundreds of conversations. But as soon as you get into the enterprise level, hospital systems, insurance companies, you have thousands of conversations. You need to act very small because that is what consumers expect, right? Mm-hmm. They expect that same service that you and I and our parents got when we went into the Allstate insurance agency local and had a relationship with an agent. That guy wouldn't have any problem getting a hold of me, but that's because it's a single person and they will call and, you know, reschedule and voicemails and emails and answer questions. How do you do that for a big company that has hundreds of thousands of members? And that's what Drips does. We give them that voice. It's all automated, but it's as humanized as it would be if you were texting me back and forth.
So let's go that. I think that's a perfect transition. So going, let's go more directly into Drips itself. So tell me about founding the company and the problem or the opportunity you saw in the market when you kind of came across this idea.
Yeah, I'd love to say it was one of those, you know, we saw a gap in the market and decided to invest in and solve it. That would be a lie, though. It was born out of necessity. And I think some of the best companies are, right? The necessity is the mother of invention. And way, way back, a partner of ours, he's a partner in the company now, had a texting system. He had a CRM, right? That did that push messaging, right? It sent out messages. That system broke one day. We had a different side business with him. And he said, hey, my system broke. Can you guys help me fix it? He knew us to be developers, right?
Yeah.
Programmers. And I said, I can't fix your system. That's not how software works. But I said, you know, tell me more about what it does. And he explained, he said, well, every day it takes my last 7 days of users, and it sends them a message. It was around the, Obama student, Loan Consolidation Reform Act, whatever. And it would message people and it'd say, hi, thanks for requesting to get your student loans consolidated. Call me back at 888-555-1212 to get your student loans consolidated or whatever.
Yeah.
And that would go out every day at noon. Same people for 7 days straight, they would get that message, a drip campaign, right? A push messaging. And that worked. He created an inbound call to his clients and whatnot, and it worked well. But one day that broke and he couldn't send messages anymore. The phone stopped ringing, big problem. Wow. So I said, well, that's not that difficult, right? So I spun up a Twilio account, which is a programmatic API software company out there that you can program it to do text and calls and whatnot. I wrangled his credit card out of him so I could, you know, have him pay for the telco. And I rebuilt the script and I rebuilt essentially exactly what his did. I made some tweaks and it took me maybe 18, 20 hours or so to, you know, get into his database and set it all up and whatnot. And I sent him, this is kind of a funny part of the story. I sent him the link at maybe, I think it was 3 a.m. East Coast. So it was midnight Pacific, which was where he was. And I sent him a link and said, when you're ready, click this link and you'll be live again. And he clicks it at midnight.
No, not at night.
Yeah, he clicks it at midnight and it just opens up and it says refreshing, 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 refreshing. And he calls me 3 a.m. again. I've been coding for, you know, a whole day straight and all night. And he's like, hey man, this thing is not working. It just says refreshing. I was like, you didn't open that, did you? And he said, yeah, it's open right now. And it just says refreshing. I was like, shut it down, shut it down. He had sent out, at by that point, you know, 5,000 text messages to people all across the country. you know, his phones were, he didn't realize at the time, he wasn't looking at the platform, but his, his dashboard, he had 100 people on hold, you know, and that, that was, you know, funny enough, that's where Drips was born. So at the time we were doing push messaging, right? This is most companies today, and this was in 2014, most companies today, big and small and medium, aren't even doing that, right?
Yeah.
So that's where we started. What we quickly realized, so long story short, he calls me back a week later. He's loving the system. You know, he's like, I need to go faster. You know, and I'm like, well, you know, okay, you'll open it up in two tabs and it'll go twice as fast. And then, let me think, fast forward a couple more iterations, a couple weeks later, my system is about to break, right? This, our partner, his name is Tom Martindale. He is just getting rich, right? He's, oh, I forgot to say the best part. So he was, converting 1 in 10 leads to calls prior, right?
Wow.
Prior that's to, good. To yeah, that's great, right?
That's like, great. That's a, just throwing that out there.
Yeah, with his push messaging, he was getting 10 people out of every 100 on the phone. Wow. With mine, the very next day, he was getting 15 out of 100. So a 50% increase in performance. And he asked me, he said, what did you do different? Like, why is your system doing so much better? I said, well, I changed the creative, right? I always say, still in the company, I say creative is the variable. All things, all technology equal, the creative is a variable. And he said, well, what do you mean you changed the creative? I said, well, you said, hello, call us back at 1-888, blah, blah, blah. Very broadcast, right? I made it more human. I said, hi, Adam. And I inserted the name, comma, it's Bob over at, you know, whatever. Call me back at my desk anytime. I'm here till 7 p.m. tonight. Looking forward to helping you out. Glad you found us on Facebook, right? So I added context. I added social proof. I added authority. I added recency, mentioning Facebook, you know, all the marketing psychological tricks. And I'm sure you've read the books. And it got him a 50% lift, right? So a week later, he's buying, you know, he's buying every click he can get on Facebook. Right? He's buying all the leads. He's crushing it. You know, he's just, he's making, you know, 50% more money than he was the day before. And my system starts to break, right? Cause it was just, it was a PHP script. It was about, you know, 4 foot tall, but it worked, but it was breaking. It was like, he would turn it on and he'd go drive around. He lived in Laguna at the time. And all of a sudden his phones would stop ringing and he'd have to call me and be like, hey, it stopped working. I'll be like, we better go back to your computer and hit refresh on the, cause it wasn't a system, you know, it was a script. So about that time I brought in, my co-founder, Anthony, who's the guy I was telling you about that, you know, I've been working with since he was 13. I was like, hey, I think there's something here. We're making some good money. You know, can you rebuild it? He rebuilt it. First thing he realized, he says, you know, your error log is full. And that's why your system is breaking, right? That's why your host is like maxed out. The hard drive essentially is maxed out. And I said, what error log? And he said, well, every time that somebody text back, right? Twilio is hitting our system looking for a response handler to tell Twilio what to do, right? And because I didn't have that response handler set up, it was adding a, you know, a bunch of data or whatever to a file that just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And he shows me, he's like, yeah, you've had 52,000 inbound texts, you know, over the last, over the last like 4 days. And I'm like, what are they saying? You know, and this is when we fell into it, right? This is when the invention happened. This is when the aha moment happened. Is we looked at these messages, Adam, and it was, call me now. Don't wait till later. How much does it cost? I can't afford it. Or, you know,
So it's almost like all the answers to an FAQ page is like right there.
Man, it was buying questions, buying statements. It was gold, right? It was, and then we'd see things, you know, that said, don't text me anymore. I changed my mind. And then guess what happened the next day? We'd text them again, right? Or it would say, call me now. And we wouldn't call them. So we built in some pretty crude functionality. You know, if they say, call me now, great. It would ring a phone. We built a chat room essentially to do kind of what I talked about with those other two-way human things. And we staffed a couple people. Long story short, we had literally two people that, if it said, how much does it cost? They had a spreadsheet, they copied the answer and pasted it and hit send. And it would say, oh, this is how much it costs. Love to talk to you about it. Can we call you now? And we went from 15% to 30%.
Come on.
100% increase over the 50% prior, right? So now
what year was this roughly?
This is 2014. Yeah, 2014.
Oh my gosh, it was the perfect. Go ahead. This is a great story. That's amazing.
So now Tom is really getting rich, right?
Like, yeah, he is.
You know, Drips is doing great, and he owns a large percent of it. And I think he was still making more money back then than he is with us now. But he was crushing it, right? He's at 300% over what he had already been doing, which was already making good money. Mm-hmm. And he kept, you know, like any good early adopter does, he kept pushing. He said, "Well, what else can we do? What else can we do? So we started building in calls, right? So we'd do a call, then a text, and then a text, then a call. And then we'd text and say, "Hey, Adam, I'm going to try you in 1 hour, unless there's a better time, ? So we put a little urgency on it, you know? And then if they didn't answer, we'd call them an hour later. And if they didn't answer that, we'd text them and say, "Hey, I just tried you. Is there a better time?" And they'd text back and they say, "Yeah, call me at 5. We'd say, "Great, talk to you then." And then at 4:55, we'd send them a reminder. We, you know, "Hey, we're going to call you in 5 minutes." And then we do the call. And then if they didn't answer that call, we'd say, "Hey, I just called you for the scheduled call. You still good now?" And it just added more and more and more and more human nuance, you know, as we went. And, you know, fast forward 5 years, right? We've done that 600 million times now. And those chat agents, those quality assurance people that were doing the copy paste, we use that to inform our proprietary natural language processing model. So now we've had almost 60 million human trainings to the system, right? So we've seen thousands of ways to say "I'm busy," thousands of ways to say I'm at the office, which we know means I'm at work, right? But a new system, a new competitor, a new company trying to build this themselves, they wouldn't have that, right? Because they wouldn't have those 600 million reps under their belt. So that's it's 5 years in a nutshell, but it's just, it was and continues to be more and more and more innovation and you know, nuance, making it more and more, and more human.
No, it's amazing. And in the evolution, like you said, that 600 million plus, like that proprietary system and what you've done, like in that beginning, that as soon as you said some of those responses, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's just gold. That's like that's your FAQ page. That's your, like, that's years of work and that much data and content coming at you that fast. It just, you can solve problems. You could see those changes like quickly to get to that 30% plus and all the other numbers you mentioned there. It's like, wow, it's freaking amazing.
We peaked out at with Tom's original campaign that was a 10% winner for him in the beginning. We peaked out at 42%. Same exact traffic, same exact users, just a better way. And that's phenomenal. What we're seeing today with our enterprises, same exact thing. You know, they start with 2% open rates and we're getting them 85% engagement rates. You know, I mean, it's just huge differences.
Let's go further down that line. So we've used the word enterprise. We've kind of spoken broadly, but let's go a little bit further on that. So what type of companies or what type of industries tend to get the most value out of working with you and your team at drips.com?
Great question. All, I would say, service-based industries, right? So we're not in the shopping cart re-engagement. Again, that would be more of a push messaging drip campaign type tool. We're in the human conversation, answering questions, educating people, scheduling calls, driving them to something, right? Some appointment, finishing a quote, signing a piece of paper, whatever it may be. And those all profile like service businesses. So you think of healthcare systems, home servicing companies, home security companies, 3-day blinds, insurance companies, you know, the Liberty Mutuals of the world.
Yeah.
They're really the ones that are leveraging us, you know, the travel and hospitality industry, the automotive industry. And we're doing everything, not just from, you know, acquisition and sales and marketing. You think of like prospect nurturing, quoted not closed, upsells, cross sells. We're doing renewals, we're doing win back programs, all the way down to payment billing issues, right? Like letting somebody know that their bill is about to be due and then letting them know when they're overdue, letting them know when they're about to lose their policy, brand adoption campaigns. Essentially, anytime an enterprise needs to get their audience to take some action, that's really our sweet spot. And, you know, all these different industries have all these different best practices. They have all these different rules, all these different regulations. Yeah. So being experts in that has really been key for us to understand these various different use cases that we focus on.
And when we talk about, let's go into a use case. So don't have to give a name of a company or something, but just like an idea, because sometimes when we use words like brand engagement or like engaging with the audience or things like that, it seems pretty like it's up in the sky. It's like, okay, that's great for that company, but like, how does that apply to me? So give me an idea of like, and since we've already done one on the sales side, so to speak, let's go on one of the, maybe another type of example that's more like, it could be nurturing. It could be like win back. It could be a lot of different things there, but give maybe another example of what that could look like.
I can give you a couple. Some of the largest insurance companies that you've seen, they run commercials all the time. We had a win back campaign. So these are people that were clients of theirs that are not anymore. Right. So still a little bit of prospect nurturing, but it's working with prior business relationships. Their target acquisition, I think, was around $400 to acquire those people. We hit it at 50. So, you know, just crushed all expectations there. Another use case we did for them was in the retention. So billing, right? So letting somebody know their bill is coming up, letting them know when it's overdue, letting them know when they're about to lose their policy. We were able to increase their retention by 9%. The goal was 1%. Right. And you got to keep in mind, these are companies that have tens of millions of drivers, right? And them getting 10% more LTV is just huge, right?
Yeah.
It's unheard of. So we've done it all the way through the funnel. You know, I mean, you can imagine, you know, letting somebody know that a hailstorm is about to hit them and trying to get them to pull in their car after, you know, the hailstorm passes. Like, there's so many times where companies need to reach out to their audience that they don't have a voice to do that right now.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. And that hailstorm example is great. So now how many less claims would they potentially get just based off that message? Somebody sitting on their couch and they get that message, and how much, like, even just for brand loyalty, like, who gets a text from their insurance company that cares about their car and is going to save them the headache of not just, you know, the money part of things, but just the headache of having to get it fixed. Nobody wants to go and get their car fixed because of a hailstorm. That's a lose-lose situation. The insurance company loses, and then the other person loses either time out of work or just a headache. Who wants to deal with it?
That's right. When we sell on the premise of three things: performance increase, which you've heard some of those numbers, OPEX savings. So you can think of all the direct mail that they didn't have to send, right? Yeah. All the call center agents that can now be inbound instead of outbound, which is a much better job, much more efficient. And the last is consumer experience, right? It's brand loyalty. It's consumer experience. It's, you know, I mean, when a customer wants to get a hold of the enterprise, that's been largely solved for, right? It's not great, but it's largely solved for. There's a lot of chatbot tools and claims, you know, and call centers. But when an enterprise needs to get a hold of a person, I mean, when's the last time your insurance company was able to get a hold of you? You know, it's not that they don't want to. Now, back to kind of your history, my financial advisor, he can get a hold of me really easily. And you know why? Because he schedules time, he leaves me voicemails, he sends me emails, he lets me know when something's urgent. And again, that's the power that we're embodying and giving to these big companies. You know, it's letting big companies act very small, which is it's scaling the unscalable, back to kind of my mission and my passion.
Absolutely. And speaking of like scaling the business, so you give us a bit of history of how this got started. So you went you bootstrapped this company and you went that route and you took the long route to maybe raising capital later in the game than maybe some would on an idea. Like, tell me a little bit more about what went into that decision and kind of in this part of the history of the company.
It's again, I wish I, you know, could claim, you know, it'd be brilliant that we waited so long to raise money. But I'm from Akron, Ohio, right? Like, we most Midwesterners, the entrepreneurs I know, at least, we built businesses to make money, right? Like, we didn't build businesses to raise money, to raise more money to hopefully have some exit. We built businesses and our projects back in the day to make money, to pay our bills. So that's how we built Drips. It was profitable from day one. It's still profitable today. We never needed to raise money. The reason that we did recently, and I'm super happy that we got paired up with the partners that we did at Accel KKR. They're a top three or four B2B SaaS investor, right?
So they're a big deal.
they're blue chip, super, super talented. And they've seen the exact problems that we have, 300 times, right? Mm-hmm. I've seen them once, you know, so we're really, really happy with our partnership with them, the expertise they bring to the table, the intros they bring to the table. They actually have a follow-on investor, Blue Venture Funds. This is a company that is backed, all the LPs are the Blue Cross, Blue Shields, right? Mm-hmm. All these healthcare companies, they did a follow-on investment with Excel KKR. So now we have a strong, strong foothold in healthcare. We have intimate insights and knowledge and intros into that world. So why do we wait so long? I would say a few things. We didn't need it, right? Mm-hmm. And when you don't need it is the best time to raise money. Yeah. The whole sell and the swell kind of thesis, we are and have been on a really good upward swing, real good penetration into enterprise. When we started, it was more performance marketing, right? So yeah. I think that's how a lot of SaaS automation marketing mm-hmm. companies start, is in performance marketers. They can move very fast and they're very nimble. And then you get home services, financial services, auto yeah. insurances, health insurances, eventually healthcare. But each of those industries move at their own pace, right? So mm-hmm. we realized that we have built a new category. Mm-hmm. We had some competitors coming in the market, and we looked at it as like, we already got a lot of moat. We already have a lot of authority, a lot of subject matter expertise, and now's the time to blitz. Now's the time to find yeah. the right financial partners, and now's the time to blitz the market.
That's awesome. And when it goes into that next stage of getting to the enterprise level, like, you almost have to do that, because like, just the, you know, the reinvesting part and like the investment you have to do to get to that next level of serving that type of clientele, it just makes sense. And it's kind of like the fuel that just makes the fire, like, you know, spread a lot faster, we'll say.
It's pattern recognition, right? Like, we could have took money from any number of people over the years. We've been looked at by strategics, by VC, mm-hmm. by PE. But it was always just money that we didn't really need at the time. Mm-hmm. What this team, Excel KKR and Blue Ventures Funds, bring uniquely is that pattern recognition and that industry insight. Blue Venture Fund, of course, and obviously for healthcare, but AKKR from a B2B best in class investor, right? Like, they have, I think 60 or so portfolio companies done this almost 300 times. So they just know how to do contracts right, or comp structure, or cost benefit analyses, or ICP and TAM exercises. So it's, like I said, this isn't meant to be a commercial for them, but I've been very, very happy with them, you know, blue chip, you know, totally.
That's exciting. I want to jump around a bit, because there's one thing that, especially as the larger, you know, enterprise companies and the decision makers that watch this type of content are thinking, and it's kind of always at the back of people's heads, is the idea of compliance in a setting like this. And I feel like the compliance piece, because again, you have these huge companies, lots of compliance, lots of red tape, lots of different things. Let's talk about that for a moment. Like, can you speak on the compliance side of things?
Yeah, I think it's been a core differentiator for Drips. You know, candidly, most companies that are given any sort of email software, dialing software, direct mail servicing, like, the direct mail company doesn't tell you what you should do to comply with Medicare, Medicaid regulations. Yeah. They just say, send us what you'd like us to send on your behalf, right? And if risk comes through, they just push it down. Now that's been largely solved for, and companies know how to do direct mail right. They know how to do dialing right for the most part. What they don't know how to do right is texting, right? Mm. Personally, in my work with the Leeds Council and the Consumer Consent Council, are writing some of these best practices. We're inventing the stuff as we go over the years, because nobody's done it this way, right? Mm. There is a ton of regulation at the federal level, at the state level. There's so many nuances depending on the industry that you're in or the use case that you operate, right? So if you, let's just say you're talking about a non-standard auto insurance company, and you send a text message saying that their bill is coming up to be due. You can talk about the bill. You can say how much it is they owe. You can say all these things. The moment that bill is due, in 15 or 16 different states, it's now considered a collection effort, even if they're still an active client, even if they're not really in collections. Yeah. So you can't then send Adam a text saying, hey, you owe us $100 for your auto insurance. So you got to know that stuff. And these companies they don't know these things because they've never been asked these questions. They've never faced these problems. So I think it is a core differentiator that we are building in as much compliance. And it's really compliance as a feature, right? Like we're coming in and we're saying like, hey, we know what you need. We're comfortable talking to your regulatory attorneys. We're comfortable talking to your compliance officers. We're the experts here. Here's our pamphlet on this law. Here's our pamphlet on that law. Here's our policy on this. Here's our policy on that.
Yeah.
And they get a lot of comfort around that because they don't know, you know, which states you're not supposed to call on during Thanksgiving or what time you can open up the East Coast or what do you do if somebody texts back and says, no, thanks. Is that a revocation of consent or is that just somebody that isn't really quite interested. You know what I mean? There's so many, what do you do when somebody sends you the middle finger emoji, right? That's not technically, you know, they're not saying unsubscribe.
Is that an unsubscribe?
Yeah, we would consider it an unsubscribe. Absolutely. But most companies wouldn't think to know that, right? So we're coming in and we're bringing a team, not just a tool, right? We're not just bringing a technology. We're bringing a whole team to come on and act as a partner with these enterprises. And that's why we went enterprise. We want to have a couple hundred of the greatest companies in the world. Mm-hmm. We don't need, you know, a couple hundred thousand, you know, DIY clients.
Yeah. Awesome. Great, great story. And you're right. How to respond to that emoji?
you don't as a spoiler. Like,
okay. Got it.
You unsubscribe them.
Amazing. So, so first off, AC, this conversation has been great. I learned a lot. I'm sure the audience did. I know you guys that you're growing. I mean, things are going well. I have to ask. So what's next? What's next for you? What's next for drips.com?
Yeah. What's next right now is market domination. I mean, and truly that's why we raised this money. We're building a world-class product team, world-class development team. We've been bootstrapped for a long time, which generally means like we were operating very lean, right? Like to accomplish what we've accomplished without raising money and without having a monstrous development team or, you know, machine learning experts and all that stuff. I've learned it's truly special. You know, it's very unique and it's very rare. But now is the time to deploy the capital, to build a team, to lean into these markets, to be the experts, and to be first. Like that I think for me is the biggest thing that is the end goal, right? Like I was doing fine before the investment, you know, I'm doing fine after. For me, it hasn't been about a big exit or the money. It's about we built a category and I want to remain first and be first in that category, right? Like I want to be the Salesforce of conversational AI. I believe that's what Drips is. So to me, it's all about category domination and definition. And you know, it feels like we're already, you know, dominating and crushing it in these markets, but we're just scratching the surface, right? Like this is not a normal methodology. It is inevitable, I believe. And I believe that we are poised to be the biggest and the best. We have a ton of moat, you know, a ton of reps, a ton of expertise, and nobody really in our sights as direct competitors. That being said, neither did Lotus Notes, you know, before Salesforce, you know, crushed them, or, you know, before Uber, there was Magic Taxi, before the iPhone, there was BlackBerry. So it's not always the market innovator that becomes the market dominator. And that's what I'm maniacally focused on. And that's why we partnered with the investors is to really lean into our potential.
Oh man, this is so good, AC. I'm excited to watch you just continue crushing it, to continue seeing you take, you know, domination in this market and working with these big enterprises and just providing value, really. I mean, some of the numbers that you mentioned here, even from your initial days, just on the acquisition from a 10% to, you know, I think you said 42% it got up to. Yeah. I'm sitting here thinking like, and then to be able to do on the enterprise level what you mentioned, you know, from 1% maybe, I think you said to 9% in terms of retention rate on these companies that have, you know, tens of millions of policies. Like that's huge on the LTV for that. I mean, just all of these different accomplishments, it just shows that. So when people are thinking about new ways of doing business, like if you're working with the right team, you have the right resources, just the right things in place, like you can make significant, you know, strides and things that maybe you didn't think were possible before. So I think this has been amazing and eye-opening for me. I know it has been. I think a lot of our audience are going to get a lot from this. That being said, so if somebody's watching this and they want to learn more about Drips and just figure out if it's right for their enterprise, I mean, where does somebody begin?
At our website, drips.com. you know, a ton of content there. Our team does a lot of education in the marketplace. You can find all our leadership there. If you're interested in connecting with myself or any of our other leaders, we're very active on social media, mm-hmm. at Drips, on any of the major accounts, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, et cetera. We don't have a TikTok yet, but you know, we've been thinking about that. But drips.com is the place. Looking forward to connecting with anybody that's interested in learning more.
Awesome. Well, again, AC, appreciate you coming on the show today. And to the audience, as always, thank you for tuning in. If you're a first time listener or visitor, don't forget, hit that subscribe button. We definitely want you to come back and be a return visitor. We have many more mission-based business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives coming on the line. And we don't want you to miss a thing. And AC, again, wish you much more continued success. And thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, Adam. Appreciate you having me.